Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. We are conducting an exclusive interview with Brian O'Higgins, top international security executive and expert, board member, Sector Advisory Council, CTO, 3rd Brigade. Brian, thank you for coming in today to share your deep insights with the audience.
Well, thank you, Stephen. I'm pleased to be here.
Brian, can you provide a profile of your roles and challenges?
My role is Chief Technology Officer, and with a relatively small technology company right now called 3rd Brigade, and we provide security products to help keep your server safe. But I'm more or less an industry spokesman for the type of technology that we provide, speaking to customers, analysts, including the press, and really figuring out what are the problems out there and trying to help come up with the appropriate solutions and then talk about what we do and what problems it will solve.
Well, I know, Brian, you have this incredible history of success and a deep sort of base in the industry. In fact, you created some of the security measures that are used today, and I know that you sit on many global boards and have contributed to many of the sort of the standards that are out there. So I can see how that would contribute to, you know, just talking with industry and with analysts and so on. As a result, I think you're in a perfect position to give your recommendations for security governance.
Yeah, well, governance, that's what drives our industry, really. I mean, I guess I'm thinking back of the last few decades of compliance and governance. And in the old days, it was Chicken Little syndrome, where, you know, security professionals went around and said, the sky is falling, and people listened for a few minutes and then did nothing. And then came the phase where the message was, if you didn't pay attention to security, some damage may occur and your brand will suffer. Well, people listened a little bit more, and then they kind of forgot about security people. And then we entered the left phase, where compliance is a big thing, and if you screw up, you go to jail. And people are starting to listen big time. And so compliance is driving our industry. And one of the latest security standards that actually probably has the biggest bang for the buck in terms of compliance and driving a lot of improvement in security is PCI, the from the Payment Card Industry Association. It's the that you need to comply with when you deal with processing credit card information. And this standard is relatively simple. It's called the Digital Dirty Dozen because it has 12 items, and it's all about common sense. And basically, it's a risk-facing standard. It says, you know, understand what you're doing, pay attention to security, and you know, figure out where you're weak and vulnerable, and pay attention to that, and put in compensating controls. And that's, of course, what everyone should be doing. And there's a whole process where you have auditors that measure your compliance and give you a pass or fail. And of course, your discussion with an auditor is always a negotiation. And there's a whole process where the auditors, in this case, are qualified auditors to do the PCI assessment. So it's a whole ecosystem around trying to improve security there. And it, you know, it's not perfect. There have been examples where a breach has occurred after an organization was, you know, deemed compliant with PCI. And people point to it and say, PCI doesn't do anything, you still have problems. But in fact, it's responsible for a lot of improvements. I mean, compliance is a point of time measurement with PCI, where you know, at this point in time, you're measured and you're okay, and you may fall out of compliance later and then have a problem. You know, we don't know for sure, but if this happens in some of the breaches, but this is way better than nothing. And because the standard is fairly short and simple and again, risk-facing, it's influencing a lot of other compliance standards, and its influence is pretty widely felt in the industry.
Can you also talk about SANS?
Yeah, there's something that that SANS is helping produce, another set of guidelines called the Consensus Audit Guidelines. And the draft 1.0 was just issued February 23, so it's very, very new. And you could find this through the SANS website. And they are asking for comments on it, so security professionals are very welcome to take a look and provide comments. And this is kind of a top 20 of what are the most important controls and metrics for effective cyber defense. And it's got a very heavy U.S. government flavor, but governments in many cases, in fact, are good leaders to follow for security practices. I mean, there are counterexamples, but in some cases they are doing a very good job. And this document are full of little notes like quick wins. You know, some things give you a lot of bang for the buck, and they're very and they're highlighted. And you know, one very visible example here is just in the U.S. federal, they have a common desktop core configuration. So they spec out, you know, for the Microsoft desktop, what is the exact configuration, and everything is standard. And this sure makes patching simpler. And of course, patching and closing off vulnerabilities is one of the most important things you can do to help maintain a secure environment. And you know, it's just a lot of common sense here. Saves money and has huge bang for buck for as a security control.
And Brian, you know, you've been out there for some time, and you talk about, or you have, you know, probably looked at sort of, you know, point solutions and then sort of combining them in some way. Can you talk about defense and depth and really what that means?
Yeah, it's just defense and depth is comes directly from the military term. You're not going to have one sort of layer of security. You'll have many many zones and different guards and doors and locks and so on, and essentially the more the better. And if one would fail, you have others to help back you up. So that's exactly what we do in IT security. And as time goes on, we keep adding new layers. And doesn't mean we get rid of the old ones. They still provide some value, especially for older threats. But when there's a new threat, we generally have a new point solution or a new layer of defense. And the best way to think of this is the innovation cycle in IT security is driven from the bad guys, not from the good guys. And most industry is the opposite. I mean, it's always such that the good guys come up with a new widget, a new thing, and you know, and that's how products evolve. But in security, you may be quite happy that you're very secure, and then 5 minutes later, some clever guy finds a new way in and something that you hadn't really thought of before, and then all of a sudden you need a new point solution to block him, and then there's a bit of industry consolidation, and the point solution vendors are gobbled up by the big guys, and you're happy with, you know, one solution for 5 minutes, and then another, you know, another clever thing will happen. So I don't see this changing. The business case is too strong for cheaters. You know, they make money doing this, so they're always going to look for another way in. So we will continue to see security evolve that way.
Can you comment further about best practices with regards to virus protection or malware and its removal?
Yeah, I guess very topical right now is the Conficker worm, or has several names, down and up. But it's a worm that is spreading quite rapidly. It first appeared last November, and it's now in its third iteration as of, you know, late February. And it's so far the estimates are about 10 million machines compromised, and it keeps on spreading further. It's a very hard thing to stop, because this worm has got a lot of self-defending capabilities. It keeps changing and morphing, and it's very hard for traditional antivirus signatures to catch it, because, you know, the worm keep adapting. The way to stop it is you don't just do one thing. There's actually several things in several layers, and I can give you a couple of examples of how we handle it. And we have a third brigade. We have a product that deep security, which protects servers, and there's a number of things. So we would, you know, I'd say the first line of defensive is don't let the worm or the virus get on the machine in the first place. So if it gets on, sometimes these things are very hard to remove or even detect. But in this case, there's a number of things you would do for best practices. Top of list is patch the vulnerability. You know, Microsoft had the patch out quite a bit ahead of the actual malware occurring, but there's still very many, you know, unpatched systems which give it life. Then, if you have an AV product, make sure the one you're using can detect and clean this particular malware. Let's see, enforce strong password policies, because the malware spreads using brute force attacks. So strong passwords should be used everywhere, and that helps contain a product, you know, malware like this. And other things to help prevent its spread or stop it getting a machine, or at least monitor the machine. So standard controls for log inspection and registry control. So if something has changed, you can stop the change, or at least you know of it right away. And then look at the traffic to and from the server. If there's something unusual in two different, say, HTTP traffic on a server that's really not supposed to be carrying on any, something strange. So a number, and of course Shield, we do this with our technology with deep hack inspections. We actually put a shield on a specific vulnerability, so that will stop all the unknown attacks from exploiting the vulnerability. So this often rolls out just after a vulnerability has been discovered, and before you have time to test and roll in a patch, you could at least do temporary shielding. It buys you time until you put in the patch. But this is great because you do this once and it stops against all the hundreds and thousands of variants that will follow. So these are a number of things I've just gone through, and any one could stop it, but you need the combination of them to be, defense in depth, to really be protected.
We see a lot of this items in the news, like, for example, cloud computing and sort of its impact and so on, but I guess we also have to look at this whole issue of security in cloud computing. Can you comment further?
Yeah, well, cloud computing and kind of lump in virtualization here too, they're different. Well, first of all, cloud computing is a marketing term, but it's I like to best think of it as raw utility computing in the cloud. So when you need extra, you need some extra servers to spin up, rather than configuring a physical server and spending a couple of weeks doing that, whatever it takes to order one and put it in and test it, you can spin one up in a matter of a minute or so, and it's just rent it for the 5 minutes you need it, and then go on to something else. So that's the promise of all these virtualization and cloud computing. So there's a couple of big wins here. This is environmentally green, and it saves money. So in today's world and economic cycle, these technologies are getting deployed very, very quickly. And it has a big change, or quite a big impact on security. So, before we ran our business processes on servers in our own data center. Now they may be running somewhere in the internet in some strange jurisdiction, which might cause you some issues with data protection language. We also lose what we know as security by default. So you may not have formalized a lot of security practices in your organization, but you had them by default. The physical server, it showed up on the shipping dock one day, and one team configures a server, someone else puts in a NIC card, someone else configures a firewall, then finally applications are loaded and away it runs. But you had all little groups of experts that really knew their stuff and doing the right thing. And as opposed to in the virtualized world, a few mouse clicks, you could spin up a new server, and maybe it's hosted in some strange country. But it's so easy to turn on and deploy that a lot of our security processes that we had by default can very easily get lost. So that's a definite, security concerns are going up big time when we look at all of that.
So now, can you sort of, again, maybe go into a little bit more detail on the virtualization side outside of the cloud?
Yeah, just virtualization itself is, again, it's such a super convenient technology, and the win is unplugging servers. I mean, that's how everyone measures their success. They had 3,000 servers, and then they could move to 300 servers, or perhaps even, 60 to 75 servers. You get a huge, 20 to 1 compression, and even more in production environments. And there's, again, a big rush to deploy this. And the what virtualization does, it just allows us to move our workload. So instead of hosting in one physical box, you have several of these server workloads in one physical box. And when that box may be taken down for maintenance, these workloads can actually do a live migration into another box. And they could do that without even losing the transaction and process. So very great and convenient for backup, for recovery services, all kinds of things. But we have some very important issues in security, and all our world of physical security in our data center with with firewalls and IDSs and IPSs that are, say, monitoring sniffing traffic for all kinds of compliance reasons. Well, these guys may get blinded because they can't see the traffic anymore because all this server-to-server communication, well, now it's inside one physical box. And then one of those server images may move around and we lose the context of all the tentacles we had into the network design when that image moves. So the physical hardware context doesn't like to, you know, move around with this. So it's, that has a huge impact in the security architecture and you might have had a lot of physical zones with different security levels. Well, that can be really thrown for a loop in this new world of virtualization. And probably an easy way to think of it, it's your server images, they become like laptops now. And you remember in the corporate world, a laptop was a catalyst where you really have to have endpoint security on the machine, because before you could kind of live with some perimeter security and then, you know, the whole network was sort of clean on the inside. But when you have these computers that could be totally protected one day, then they, you know, moved off the network and went to a Starbucks and caught some disease and then returned and infected from the inside out, that was a problem. So that same issue is really happening to servers as we go forward in this cycle.
Can you provide your predictions of future IT and business security trends and their implications and opportunities?
Well, as we go forward, you know, despite the evolution of computing, we're getting more and more interconnected. So almost everything has some CPU and IP addresses, and they start to talk to each other. And we spend less and less energy putting security in as we move to a new kind of phase of technology. We never kind of get to that old technology level of security with the new stuff. And, you know, you kind of add it on later, but it never kind of gets to the level of the old things. And way back from the days of mainframes, and you move to client server, and then to you know, multi-tier, and then endpoint to mobile, and now Web 2.0, more and more capability, more and more interconnectedness, and less control for security. So I really don't see that changing. And in the enterprise, we have another problem. We're getting, you know, I call it the security skills divide. So we're getting, our end users are getting less expert with security because there's just more of them doing more complex things. In the enterprise, we're essentially getting less expert because now we have, say, businesses which want to roll out a revenue-producing application, and it's going to, you know, ship on a certain time frame, and that generally, you know, you don't like to slip on that date, and quality and function may slip in this case. And the application may even be written by non-programmers, because we have such powerful tools and scripting languages that kind of anyone could deploy this this interactive application. And so the result is where, you know, when you're building applications with the developers not even really understanding security properly, we're in another whole new world of hurt again. And on the other hand, the bad guys, they're still very clever, and they look at these complex interactions in these, say, Web 2.0 applications, and they kind of know right away how to get to, you know, where are the seams to start picking away at, and you know, they bang away at it enough, and they will get in, and then they get to cause some damage. And then you go back to the enterprise, and you speak to the security group, and they're often the guys that run the network and know a lot about firewalls and rules and policy that way, but very little about the applications. In fact, they're not even programmers, and they don't own the applications. So it's you know, so the vulnerabilities essentially moved into an application world, and there's a very difficult to protect, to close them off right now, and you know, wide open door for the bad guys. So life still is getting harder for us.
What are your top recommended resources and why?
Oh, there's a lot of government resources which are very good here from you know, for just looking at security policies and guidelines and so on. NIST is a great set of publications, and then very security organizations such as SANS. And I, you know, if people are looking for information, I would head to these places pretty early on, and there's a huge set of links and follow-on hints from there.
Well, we're getting to the end of your, or I should say our interview here, and usually what I do now is I sort of put it the ball into your court and say, well, if you were doing this interview, what questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
Oh, I guess the big question is, like, what do we do? You know, it's such a, the world's getting hard, and the bad guys seem to be winning, and, you know, how do we turn this around? And it's not an easy one to answer, but I would say, in general, we need to spend more attention on security. And, you know, it's kind of not surprising as we, as computing and computers get more and more capable, and they kind of move up the food chain so far, as if you can imagine in intelligence, then they just need to spend more of their energy in being self-defending. And, you know, think of small animals. They don't spend a lot of their life, on care and security. They're more, you know, looking for food and so on. But, you know, but people, you know, we have, if you have kids, you probably, don't fully let them out into the real world until they're age 20 or something before they could totally fend for themselves. So you spend a lot of attention on safety and security. So the same is happening with computers. And, the model I see, I would, you know, really call it, a self-defending computer. And, I think we always see examples of this in Star Trek. And if you remember, even from way back when, you know, the only way Captain Kirk would break into something is if he could, talk the computer into nervous breakdown and get through it. So, I could see that kind of thing happening, and it's essentially just, you know, focus and spend more attention on various levels of defense. The no, we can never be. You would like to be perfectly secure, but that will be impossible. But a very practical definition of being secure is that you're just, you know, epsilon better than the effort the bad guys are willing to expend against you. And if you're just that much better, then you're going to be fine. And it's in practice, it's pretty easy to be just a little bit better than the other guys. And then the bad guys will be banging away at your neighbors, if you will, and you will be perfectly safe. So it's a matter of just staying ahead of the threat, always looking for best practices, and be better than you know, be a leader amongst your peers, and then you will be safe.
Brian, because you get around so much, and again, you've had such a dominant role in the industry, again, creating some of the, you know, the references and other kinds of standards that are used today worldwide, do you have any stories you can share?
Oh, I guess security people, you always find, is always in a horror story category. You could always see a lot of mistakes happening, and kind of a, seems like a fairly innocent mistake being made, but then it cost the organization even tens of millions of dollars to recover from it because they let their guard down and a virus got in, and we just see this too often. And on the other hand, I mean, this is not a terribly exciting war story, but I could see people spend a lot of money and be very, you know, almost bulletproof on security or spend huge attention on it, and then they get criticized for overspending because there's been no disclosure. You don't need to spend so much on security, and you see even people criticizing governments in that regard. And these things are hard to hear, because he can't win either way, and you know, you always have to have the right balance. And it's this is a how long is a piece of string argument. There's no really right answer here. It's what's going to be right for you and your circumstances. But I would spend a lot of attention looking at best practice leaders in your industry and really following, learning from them, and then just, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a leader and being secure.
Well, Brian, I really appreciate you coming in today, and we'll continue to follow your significant contributions. So we thank you for sharing your time, wisdom, and accumulated deep insights with our audience.
Yep. Thank you, Stephen. Enjoyed our chat.
This concludes our exclusive interview with Brian O'Higgins, top international security executive and expert, board member, Sector Advisory Council, CTO, 3rd Brigade.